Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Welcome to Local Food Connections, a show about the power of locally grown food to connect us more strongly with our communities and the lands we inhabit. The show promotes sustainable food systems that foster community resilience and empower people to make positive choices for themselves, their communities, and the environment. Local Food Connections is brought to you by Local Food Connect. We're broadcasting from Wurundjeri country and we pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging. We respect the enduring strength of First Nations people and acknowledge their long heritage of agriculture and care for the land in which our food is grown. I'm Anne Stanley, and this morning I'm introducing a new feature of the show. I'm calling it the Local Food Connections Report, and it's basically a subsection of the Local Food Connections show, which I'll include from time to time, especially if I haven't got a guest. So I haven't got a guest today, and it's an opportunity because I've often got ideas that I'd like to share or events that I'd like to talk about or news that I'd like to report on. And I don't really have the chance because I want to give as much time as possible to the fantastic guests that we always have on the show. So today it's just me and I'll be reporting on some events that you can go to, especially around wild edible weeds, because I've been thinking a lot about that lately. So I'd like to talk a bit about that today, tell you where you can go and find out more about it, and also talk about some experiences that I've had in my own very wild garden. Not necessarily wild by design, but wild by laziness or busyness or just letting things go, curiosity, just to see what happens. So that's basically what we're going to be talking about today. I'm going to be talking a little bit about the Japanese gardener. I might as well talk about him now, farmer, actually. Masanobu Fukuoka. Fukuoka. And he had a natural farming method. He'd studied in traditional agriculture, I believe, in Japan, but then went on to develop his own method, which he called natural farming, and sometimes he called it do-nothing farming. This is something that really appeals to me. And obviously, it's actually a bit of a myth in that people think that permaculture means do nothing, but it kind of means do much, much less of what you want to do and much, much more about what nature wants to do in your garden. So it doesn't mean doing nothing at all. And for Fukuoka, it meant avoiding unnecessary human intervention and allowing natural processes to do a lot of the work on his farm. So it's stuff that's become, some of it's quite conventional now, or not conventional, but in the mainstream, like not tilling the soil too much, not adding chemical fertilizers, pesticides or herbicides. And he also said, not ripping out every weed either. So another thing was, his book's called The One Straw Revolution, and it was all about straw mulch. So he would be harvesting rice, and then he would spread the rice straw back over the field to protect the soil, and that would keep the moisture in. And then he would add organic matter, and then maybe plant a cover crop like clover, to enrich the soil. And then he became famous. You might be familiar with seed balls, where he would coat seeds in clay so that they form small balls, and then he just scattered them over the fields. And the clay, the idea of the clay was to protect the seeds from the birds and the harsh conditions until the clay broke down and then they could germinate. He worked with natural cycles. He didn't force the crops to grow through managing them intensely. He tried to understand the local climate, soil, plants, insects, seasons, and design the farm around them. So probably, I'm not quite sure of the lineage, but he's probably a precursor to the thinking of Bill Mollison and David Holmgren when they formulated permaculture, but I don't know how direct the influence was. So the book is interesting. It's a whole philosophy that he has, and he outlines that in a book called The One Straw Revolution, where he describes both his practices and also his broader philosophy of living in harmony. So in my own garden, I did a permaculture course in 2018 and had high hopes for my permaculture garden. But I did know I was working against the odds a bit. I'm in Warrandyte. There's very shallow. If there's actually no soil in parts of my garden, because it's built on rock, it's mainly just rock, and also a lot of sort of rubble, possibly left over from gold mining. So very little soil. Also very little light, because there's a lot of gum trees that we don't cut down, obviously not allowed to cut down, and it's also on a slope, so a lot of the water runs off. So we have terraced a bit. But basically we've got one little growing area. We've got in that full wicking beds, and I added basically compost, animal manure, and I just topped that up with soil from the bottom, with straw from the bottom of my chook cage, which is the chook pen's got deep layer of straw, which I keep replenishing, and then I just add that with the chook poo, whatever state it's in, on top of the soil. And basically I do that with no care for when it should go on or whatever. I do it when I feel like it, when I see it, when I want to, whatever. And what I want to report today is that I neglected the garden for a whole year. So last summer I didn't even water it, and went away for a while and was quite despondent when I saw the parrots eating my tomatoes, which I hadn't netted, and my passion fruit, which I hadn't netted. And then because I didn't water it, I didn't get any figs, I didn't get any berries, I didn't get any feijoa, so I didn't get any passion fruit, I didn't get any tamarillo. So I was sort of thinking, well, you've sort of failed at this permaculture caper, at least for this year. But what I did was I got some straw anyway and chucked it back in the wicking beds. And then everything that had gone to seed over summer, I just picked the seeds off when I saw that they were dry and threw them into the ground. And I said, I'll come back to gardening in a few months when I can. What has happened is that I have got a lot of stuff growing. A lot of it's, I'll tell you what I've got actually. I wrote it down in a list. I've got mizuna, coriander, parsley, tatsoi, mustard plants, kale, not much, potatoes, all grown by neglect or by just throwing seeds on the ground. Not even putting the seeds in the ground, literally just shaking the plant that had gone to seed and just leaving them in the ground. Again, no idea whether it was the right time to put the seeds. Again, it was just an intuition that if nature made the seeds at that point and the sun dried them, they might as well go on the ground. Many of them obviously would have been lost to birds and things, but I've got a lot of green vegetables in the garden. I've also got mallow, chickweed, oxalis, dandelion, and these are all weeds that I decided not to pull out. So I want to talk about that idea of wild gardening today, and or maybe even, you know, gardening for the busy or lazy person, or the person that prefers to work intuitively rather than scientifically with gardening. So I think there's a spectrum, just as there's a spectrum in people's personalities. So I want to talk about common mallow today. Excuse me. So mallow, it's a plant, it's called Malva neglecta or Malva paraflora, and you would know what it looks like. It's growing all over my garden, and it also grows all over places where there's disturbed soil. So by the roadside or on building sites, the leaves look a bit like geranium leaves. They're sort of round and they're soft and they've got scalloped edges. So they look a bit like a geranium. I've got hundreds of them in the garden. Normally people would pull them out, but I just left them. And to be honest, I haven't used them much in cooking because they haven't got a great taste or anything. They haven't got any taste really. But occasionally just a couple of leaves into the pasta sauce or something to augment the parsley or whatever. But recently my Egyptian friend brought over something called molokhia to cook. And for a while she'd been telling me about this dish that she first ate in Egypt as a young child. And shortly after her family migrated here, her dad discovered that he could find molokhia here. He might even have brought some seeds. I'm not sure what exactly the story was, but he got his hands on some molokhia here, and then they started growing it at Joe's Market Garden in Coburg, which is where they were living. This was in the early 70s. And we went there a few years ago, my friend and I, and she was saying, oh, I can't remember what this plant was. And I was thinking, is it mallow? Because she seemed to be describing something that sounded like mallow. Anyway, she decided to try and find out what it was. She asked her family. It turns out to be molokhia. And she bought some at Middle Eastern grocery. And she brought it over and she wanted to show me how to cook this dish that she remembered fondly from her childhood. And before we cooked it, we just Googled it and found that it was related to common mallow. So we decided that while she cooked the molokhia and I watched how she did it, I, on the adjacent burner, cooked up a load of mallow from the garden with the same method. And I must say it was absolutely fantastic, really, really delicious. And the mallow had had a bit of an edge flavor-wise, and I think it mainly be just because it was fresh and not frozen. That's probably the reason. And if you wanted to grow the molokhia, I think you can probably source it in Australia through Eden Seeds or Bullion Art and Garden or something. Certainly you could source it. You wouldn't have to import the frozen packaging from Egypt or somewhere. It's actually used all over the world. It's called molokhia in Egypt and in other parts of the Middle East. It's called jute mallow. So it is actually jute. So you can make rope and fibers out of it. It can be called bush okra. In the Philippines, they call it salayot. And in Nigeria, ewedu. So it does sound like it's a sort of a weedy thing that grows easily. And both molokhia and mallow grow well in the Mediterranean area. So we'll have a little break and I'll come back in and I'll tell you how to cook it.
You're listening to 3CR 855 AM, the voice of the community.
3CR, community radio, giving the voice to the community since 1976.
The new Climate Action radio show will surprise you.
Well, first of all, I'm not a believer in global warming. I'm not a believer in man-made global warming.
And so you'll hear voices from all around Australia and overseas that are taking all types of climate action, whether it's stopping coal and gas, whether it's building a new model of society, or whether it's just sustaining you in the grief you may feel about the climate destruction we're facing. And in that spirit, here's a poem by Rumi. Stop, take a breath, for you are drunk, and we are at the edge of the roof.
This is coal. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared. It's coal. It's coal. It's coal.
Tune in every Monday at 5 PM to hear the Climate Action Radio Show.
So how you cook either molokhia or mallow is this. It's very easy and surprisingly delicious. Excuse me, that's my dog. So what you do is you fry up about a teaspoon of ground coriander seeds and about 6 chopped up cloves of garlic, and you add about a liter of stock to that and just kind of bring it to the boil, you know, heat it up. And when it's pretty hot, you drop the mallow or the molokhia into it. and you can add salt and pepper if you like. And when it's cooked, you just serve it over some rice. And my friend also made a side dish of chopped onions and lemon juice, which was lovely. So it gave it a real hit of flavour in there. Then you can add that according to your taste. It was really delicious. In the case of the mallow, it cost next to nothing. And my friend talked also about how kids in Egypt remember it fondly. So it's almost like kids. It's like a really, really dark green, nutritious thing that kids like. And it could be that it's got mucilage in it. So it's got quite a slippery sort of creamy texture. So it's very pleasant to eat. And then during the week, I tried it with mizuna. Mizuna is a sort of a peppery Japanese mustard thing, and it's often eaten in raw salads. Like if you were to buy a packet of salad mix from the supermarket, it would have a little bit of mizuna in it. It's a sort of frilly looking plant, often purple and very and hot, like rocket. That the heat went completely out of that when I cooked it up in this with that same method, but it boiled down to, you know, a nice green vegetable without any of the heat, but with some of the bitterness still in it. So I was very excited by that, and did the research, of course, and found that the mallow and the molokhia and the spinach are all very similar in nutrition, and that in some areas the other two are higher than spinach. So they've got the mallow anyway has got higher calcium, higher iron sometimes, more dietary fiber because of that mucilage, which is good for your digestion. It's a little bit more tender than spinach. It's a little bit milder than spinach. And as I say, it's just growing wild everywhere. And all of these plants, they contain oxalates, which can reduce calcium absorption and contribute to kidney stones in people that are susceptible to that. But spinach is very high in oxalates, and common mallow also contains them, but at much lower levels. So the common mallow would be a really great alternative to somebody who was concerned about their kidneys but wanted to have green vegetables. So yeah, so it was a good discovery, and I'll be experimenting much more with that. Now, there's a great little book, The Weed Forager's Handbook by Adam Grubb. We had Adam on the show in 2024 for a chat about edible weeds, and Adam, he runs very edible gardens, helping people to set up permaculture gardens, building wicking beds, chook systems, etc. And he also offers, I don't think there's one coming up, but walks around Merri Creek showing all the food that's growing for free and how to identify edible and non-edible plants. So I'm just going to play you a little extract from the interview that I did with Adam in 2024. If you want, on a walk around Merri Creek and or maybe other places, I don't know, and show you all the food that's growing for free in the form of edible weeds, and he'll also show you how to avoid the ones that are not good for you. So the main thing we're going to be focused on today is edible weeds. And Adam, why should we be eating weeds?
Why should you? Well, I mean, number one, there's a lot of free stuff that you can eat in the world. And who doesn't like free stuff? Cost of living crisis. I kind of got into this. I was just weeding the garden one day and I didn't know what plant it was. And I felt ignorant. I felt disrespectful because I don't even know the name of this plant that I'm pulling out. Like, I should at least know the name of my enemy to honor it. And I was able to ID it, and it was a little plant called chickweed. And once I got its botanical name, Stellaria media, I was able to look up it more on the internet and in books and say, oh, it's edible. It's used medicinally. And it has connections to human cultures. And this little thing that I was just ripping out thoughtlessly suddenly became infused with all this knowledge and uses. And it is valued by cultures all around the world. And so that started me researching others. And it turns out more and more of them. turned out to be edible or medicinal or both, and oftentimes more nutritious than the cultivated plants that I was going to grow after I finished weeding the garden. Now, there are things that I would grow in my veggie patch rather than those weeds, but if I'm weeding, I'm going to eat them on the way. Also a whole lot of free stuff that pops up in public landscapes. You've got to be careful about that. Maybe we could do some little asterisks about safety. But the world is exploding when you know when to look, what to look for, with free food everywhere you go. And these are plants which come, a lot of them from Eurasia, some of them from the Americas, and some are indigenous to Australia, but they are adapted to disturbance and they follow agricultural humans everywhere we go in the world. So you can travel the world with and just knowing 20 plants and you'll find them everywhere in temperate and subtropical environments. And so you've got edible friends everywhere you go.
And they often appear on disturbed land in huge quantities, don't they? In big lush groups of
that's right,
jungle,
yeah.
A jungle of edible weeds.
Like it's your Homer Simpson in chocolate land out there once you know what to look for. The only difference is it's not maybe quite as delicious, but some of these plants are real gastronomically interesting. Mm-hmm. There's wild onion and garlicky flavoured things. There's really zesty lemony flavoured things. But then there's also all those like bitter greens like dandelion, sow thistle, wild lettuces, chicories, and these things which are associated often with Mediterranean cooking. And they're, you know, really good side dishes that you often eat with a little olive oil, lemon juice and salt. And are really important parts of a lot of cultures. And you'll still see people from those heritages out on the side of the road picking them. Mm-hmm. But we can all do that and save ourselves some money on food. And you couldn't really ask for a more environmentally friendly thing to eat because nobody put any energy into it. Somebody was probably trying to get rid of it and it grew there anyway. so, like, you're probably doing somebody a favour. And nutritionally, like I said, a lot of them are more nutritionally dense than cultivated plants, which often bred a little bit more for the
taste,
volume
and taste sometimes. Like a broccoli's got a really nice taste, hasn't it? But I think its ancient ancestors are a bit more nutritious.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Like there does seem to be a tendency that the wild plants are more nutritionally dense than their cultivated ancestors. And like you pointed out there, broccoli is a cultivated version of wild plants, and there's not the direct ancestors of broccoli aren't around. The direct ancestor of lettuces and some of the others, but there are very close things that look a lot like what the ancestral broccoli would have looked like growing wild in Melbourne and surrounds. And they probably are more nutritionally dense. They might be a little bit more mustardy because it's the mustard family. And so, yeah, the wild brassicas are really interesting.
Right, so that was Adam Grubb there talking about his interest and knowledge of wild edible plants that are all over the world, all around us, often on disturbed land. I liked how he talked about respecting the plant and naming it and then finding out more about it. Rosemary Morrow talks about that. She's a permaculturalist. I think she's in northern New South Wales. And she talks about, you know, it would be a great project to name every organism in your garden so you really, really know where you are and what you're living with. Anyway, I thought I'd tell you some things that you can go to this in the coming months, actually, if you're interested in getting into this a bit more. So, and by the way, this is a Local Food Connection show on 3CR, you can visit the 3CR website. In fact, if you go to 3CR Local Food Connections, you can get all of our episodes of the podcast and you can listen to Adam for the whole interview if you like. But in the meantime, you can also go to a wild foraging workshop. This is Sunday the 16th of August, 11 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. It will cost you $20 and it's at Ringwood Community Centre. They're going to take you on a wander through the local bushland to identify edible plants, herbs and flowers that are growing all around you. And it's an experienced forager, I'm not sure who, will be guiding you and they'll give you safety tips as well about what not to eat and sustainable practices of gathering the stuff and simple ways to use it at home, which, as I was talking earlier, was invaluable for me to know what to do with the wheat. because you don't cook it necessarily just the way you would your normal, your conventional European vegetables. The local web, you go to the Local Food Connect website, localfoodconnect.org.au, and you'll get their current newsletter, which will list all of the events. There's another one at Ceres, Wild Weed Foraging, Sunday the 20th of September, 10 till 2 p.m. That one will cost you $124. That's at Ceres in Brunswick. That again will it's by Leela Alexander. We've had her on the show too, Alexandra, and she'll show you how to, in her words, activate your foraging senses to find food wherever you happen to be: roadsides, creek banks, the bush, parks, and gardens, all teeming with plants that can be eaten or used as medicine. Many of these plants we call weeds. Some are introduced, while others are native and have been used for thousands of years by Aboriginal people. So she'll talk to you all about that if you join up with that one. And finally, there's one called Using Your Weeds Workshop with Marina. That's Sunday the 18th of October. Again, you don't need to write that down. Go to localfoodconnect.org.au. That's in McLeod at Marina's home, I think. The cost is free. She believes we don't value the weeds enough, and that they should not be discarded. And I think her idea is that you'll go there, she'll show you what's in her garden, how to use the weeds. She'll provide a cuppa and snacks. And then if you're able to stay to do some work in the garden, you can do some weeding or garden work and get some hands-on experience with Marina. So you can find that on the website. What else? NERP, N-E-R-P, the Northeastern Region Permaculture Group. So if you wanted to get involved in permaculture and you're in the sort of northeast area of Melbourne, you could just Google them, and they've got a Facebook page too, Northeastern Region Permaculture. And they recently had a mini perma blitz at the home of a couple called Alicia and Paul, beautiful artistic mud brick home and garden in Eltham. So what happens at a perma blitz is that people go along, they have lunch after, and they maybe spend an hour or a morning or a day blitzing the garden, turning it into a permaculture project, and then, you know, obviously share experiences with each other, sharing a meal, all that sort of stuff. So you find out about that. Well, you can't, that one's already gone, but that's the sort of thing that the Northeast Permaculture group run. And finally, we've only got a couple of minutes. Morag Gamble, who you've been listening to from the Festival of Wild and Kind Ideas, is offering something really good. It's this Wednesday, 12th of August. She will have a one-hour online session to find ways to integrate permaculture thinking into your life and to share it further through your household, your neighbourhood, your organisation, or your profession. It's called Design Your Permaculture Life, and it's two sessions to choose from, 10 to 11 a.m. Brisbane time or 7 to 8 p.m. Brisbane time, and it's Wednesday the 12th of August. You'll need to go to Morag Gamble's website to find out about that, because we're out of time. I'm Anne Stanley. You've been listening to Local Food Connections, or the Local Food Connections Report on 3CR, and today I've been speaking about edible weeds and wild gardening. If you want to find out more about the local food movement, you can go to the Local Food Connections website. Until next week, love the land you're on, share your surplus, and take care of each other. If you value independent media, please donate or become a 3CR subscriber. 3CR depends on your financial support to continue to broadcast. Stay tuned now to 3CR for more radical radio with Latin American Update. Bye for now.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.